Good morning, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tom. I use my last name, too, all the time. Calvin almost did it, and so it reminded me not to do it. But I usually use my last name, but we're recording, right? That'll probably be my first talk about traditions and events. I think that we're free, and I would encourage all of us to use last names. It's tough for Michelle and I, my girlfriend, we talk about, I was talking to Sarah. Which Sarah, right? We know like six different Sarahs. And knowing people's last names, it just helps keep each other apart one from the other. So I think within our confines, we use our last names, or I encourage you to use last names. It's what we do. We shouldn't be concerned about having to be anonymous. If you feel you need to be anonymous, right, that's your right. But there's nothing wrong with letting folks know who you are, except when we're being recorded. Right, so tradition 11 suggests that if we're recording, we should probably not give last names. But in any event, I am an alcoholic, and my name is Tom. And my home group is the No Hassle Group in Dallas, Texas. And I'll introduce myself here like we do at home. Or by the grace of a loving God, I haven't had a drink of liquor since the 29th of November, 1987. And for that, I'm very grateful. Everything's bigger in Texas, including the introductions. But this is AA Traditions and AA Events, and it's an honor to be here and share with you all my experience about the traditions as they relate to AA events. There's a couple folks in the room that know that I've got some history with a thing called ICKIPA. If you've not heard of ICKIPA, it's the International Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, and there are lots of other PAs, right? There's probably a PA in your state. There's an OEPA in Cleveland, and there's an ARCIPA in Arkansas, and there's a TICKIPA in Tennessee, and they are not in any way related to each other. Right? Some people think that it's sort of analogous to ICKIPA is the mothership, and all these others sort of roll up to ICKIPA, and it's not true. They're all autonomous in the spirit of Tradition 4. But that's where most of my experience comes from with AA traditions and AA events. So I'll talk primarily from that perspective this morning. The first thing I want to talk about briefly is Tradition 3. Sometimes we hear people, in particular about young people's conferences, there's this gripe about, oh, well, that's not third tradition. Third tradition says the only requirement of membership is the desire to stop drinking. So why do you have this young people's conference? Well, there's nothing that says you have to be a certain age, right? I've gotten a lot of questions over the years about what's the age limit? And there is no age limit. Right? The history of young people's groups starts with groups that call themselves like the 40 and under group or the 35 and under group. And there's been some history that we've had age limits, but young people's conferences don't turn anybody away. So if you come to a young people's conference or a young people's meeting for that matter, and you're not young chronologically, you're still welcome there. It's hard to be, or even if you get sober at 12, right, it's hard to be really an old timer if you're a bona fide young person, right? Because it just, the calendar doesn't work out very well. So young people's groups and young people's conferences often like folks who've got more experience in sobriety to come and hang out. So if you think that young people's not for you, right, and we use this expression in the young people's thing, young is people with room to grow, and I'm not sure that I really like that either. It gives us this picture of all-inclusiveness, but for me, my experience was that I needed to find my peers, and that's why I got and stayed involved with young people stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous, is because when I was newly sober, I needed to run around with people who looked like me and talked like me and acted like me, and when I got to hang around with other young people, that encouraged me to stay in a way that many other things did not. So I'll encourage you, for those of you who may be a little resistant to the young people's thing, or perhaps in your circle there's some closed-mindedness about the young people's thing, I assure you that there's no third tradition issue there. I'd like to talk next about money. We all love to talk about money. So I'll talk about Tradition 7 and money and some things as they relate to conferences and other events from my experience. The first of which I want to talk about is scholarships. Young people's conferences in particular have in recent years, maybe the last 10 years, 15 years, have gotten in a habit of collecting money from other AA members to just go in a pot that covers the registration expense of folks who come to the conference and perhaps don't have enough money to pay the registration cost at the door. Most of you, if not all of you, have read that either on the app or in the program. Right, there's that business about why do we pay to go to AA meetings? Right, we sometimes get folks that bristle about having to pay to go to anything involved with AAA. It's supposed to be free, but this is not free. Right, I promise you, right? And anything we do, and right, our home groups aren't free. Right, our home groups don't cost necessarily what all this costs. But there's a cost associated with Alcoholics Anonymous wherever we go when we try to pay our own way. And one of the things I want to talk about with scholarships is if you're involved with an event that does not do scholarships currently, I would encourage you to consider it. It's a great opportunity, and it sort of eases that poke in the eye that people that don't have money in their pocket feel when they come to one of these events and they're told, hey, listen, this is a special event. It's an option. It's not required for sobriety. And so if you don't have the money, we'll encourage you to go to the meeting down the street. And if there's a scholarship available for folks, we can let them in. Right? And I think conventions that sort of draw a line and say, you have to pay to get in. My hat is off to them. Not because they're turning people away from AA, but because they've made a group conscience decision, tradition two, they made a group conscience decision and they stuck to it. And I think it's important that we pay our own way. One of the things that we did when we hosted ICIPA in Orlando in 2004, we had scholarships. But we did not just, when people came and said they didn't have money, we did not just say, okay, cool, well, no big deal. Here's a badge. Go have fun. We had a little blurb that we printed out on little slips of paper that sort of explained the scholarship process. Right? So it said, welcome to the, and I'm just paraphrasing, but it said something like, welcome to the conference. Please understand that you did not get in for free. Please understand that some other anonymous member of the fellowship paid your way into this event. If your circumstances warrant, we'd encourage you to pay that forward at some time in the future, and we'll also ask you to be of service to the conference. And what we did, if the registration fee, I don't remember, it was $30 or whatever it was at the door, and if people wanted a full $30 scholarship, we asked them, will you give 3 hours of service to the conference? Right across the table from the registration table, right across the hallway or whatever from the registration table, was the volunteer table. And we said, okay, if you need a full $30 scholarship, go over there and tell those guys you need 3 hours of something to do. If you only needed 10 bucks and you could afford 20, well, then you only had to give an hour. And we didn't follow anybody around. We didn't make sure, right? We didn't ask them to go get a slip sign and bring it back, right? We put them on their honor at that point that, hey, listen, what we're going to ask of you, right? And why did we think as a committee that was important? Because there's a spiritual significance to self-support. Self-support, to me, is not just about the fact that we don't take outside money. Because that's a bad idea, right? I think we're always preaching to the choir in traditions meetings of any kind, right? That the people that come to traditions meetings are never the people that go, boy, I don't know a thing about the traditions and I don't like them, right? The people that come to traditions meetings are primarily people that like the traditions and know something about the traditions already. So I don't have to, right? I don't have to share with y'all the perils of taking outside money. But that's not the only reason to me why the seventh tradition is so important. I think it's important that we pay our own way. Individually, me, I make some contribution. So even if I'm newly sober, and even if I don't have much money in my pocket, this sort of little thing that our host committee had worked out, where folks could be of service in exchange for getting in without having to pay out of their own pockets, it gave folks an opportunity to be self-supporting. Right, we thought that was important. Another thing in the way of self-supporting, there is sometimes a history. There happens to be a convention in my neck of the woods, and there are many other conventions around the country that for whatever reason think that we should let people from treatment centers in for free. And that's created some controversy. We, again, our host committee, drawing on our experience hosting ICIPA in Orlando, we reached out to, right? We thought, you know, we ought to ask some questions, right? We don't know it all. So we figured we called the office, we called GSO, and we talked to the guy, a guy named Richard B. He's since left us. He's since passed. But we called and we said, hey, what's the deal with letting people into treatment from treatment centers into conventions for free? He says, and he did not give the usual, well, our experience suggests that we sometimes do this and then others do that. And we would welcome you to do whatever it is that you think your conscience would have you do and let us know how it turns out. We did not get that sort of answer from Richard. The answer we got from Richard about people from treatment centers getting in for free was, why the hell would you do that? And that's sort of, right, well, wait a minute, what? Well, because, right, I mean, we have good reasons, right? People that are in treatment, they don't work. They're in this treatment center. They're paying, like, an arm and a leg to be in this treatment center. They don't have any money. But what about people that come into AA off the street? I was nearly unemployable when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have much money in my pocket. But I didn't go through a treatment center. So why is it that I'm expected to pay my own way, but folks that end up in treatment, you can get in for free. I'm not sure how that works. The interesting thing is, right, we wanted people from treatment centers to be at our event. So the interesting thing is that when these folks from the treatment centers would call us and say, hey, we want to bring some of our guys down, we said, yeah, the registration fee is $25. You want to bring 20 guys down, right? You can send us a check for $500. Every single treatment center we talked to, without hesitation, said, where do we send the check? Nobody for a moment was like, oh, come on, these guys are... The treatment center's got plenty of money to allow these guys to go do, or gals, to go do what it is that they want to do. So something to think about. I want to move on and talk about fundraising for a quick minute. For those of you who've known me for any length of time and, you know, you've been involved with me in service, you know I am opposed to fundraising. I think when we do this, these fundraisers, and I don't think it's wrong to have events. Let's have a dance. Let's have a picnic. Let's have a whatever, right? Game night, a bingo night, whatever we want to do. Let's do it. And there are expenses that go along with these events that we throw, right? If we're going to throw a dance, for example, we probably have to pay the church or whatever hall we're in, like the VFW hall. They probably are going to expect some rent. So, and again, in the spirit of being self-supporting, we should probably ask people to pay at the door their piece of what we think it's going to cost to pay things off. Right, so if we're paying $1,000 in rent, we expect 100 people to come, we should probably ask $10 apiece for those 100 people. So we get the $1,000. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. What concerns me is when we have an event that costs $3 a head based on how many people we think we're going to have come, and we charge 10. And we use that extra $7 a head to put in the general fund for the convention so we don't have to make the registration price so high. Well, now as a conference attendee or as a convention attendee, what you've done is you've deprived me of my opportunity to be fully self-supporting through my own contribution. Because when I pay a $20 registration at that convention and you've covered $5, it should have been $25, you've covered $5 of that for me by throwing some event that other people put money in the kitty for. You've deprived me of my opportunity to pay my own way. If it costs me $25 to be there, I'd like the opportunity to pay $25, not pay $20 and somebody else paid the other $5 for me. Right? There was time where I needed somebody to help me out, but I don't need that. And most of us don't need that help anymore. So it makes me nervous when we throw these events that subsidize other events. Is that a violation of the seventh tradition? I'm not sure, right? I'm not a guy here who's to tell you what's right and what's wrong. And I just don't think the traditions, I don't think that's the spirit of the traditions at all. And I think when I get in this business of what you do and what you don't do and what you should do and what you shouldn't do, I think I've probably gone contrary to the spirit of the traditions in the first place because they're not rules. And I'm not sure that they're designed for me to tell you what to do. I think the traditions work best for me when I use them to guide and govern my own behavior. And then I'm leading by example instead of driving driving by mandate. Right, our leaders seem to be more effective in Alcoholics Anonymous when we lead by example rather than drive by mandate. Another thing I want to talk about in the spirit of seventh tradition is donations in kind. I think we should be careful about somebody who works for a soft drink distributor. A member of the fellowship works for a soft drink distributor. And the soft drink distributor, the principal there is not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but this employee who is a great employee, because we know that, right, when we're sober, we're usually pretty good employees. So this employee is involved with this convention and they say, wow, that's great. I'd like to donate 80 cases of soda to your event. And so as a committee, sometimes we say, well, if he takes it from his boss and then the AA member brings it to us, right? It's not an outside contribution, right? We alkies are crafty. Right, we try to figure out ways around things, but I'm not sure that the traditions are things that we ought to be looking for loopholes in and ways around. The traditions are spiritual principles that guide us and keep us from the rocks. Right, like think of us as the Titanic and these issues as the icebergs, and the traditions keep us away from the icebergs. And so if we say that this soda came from quote unquote this member, I'm not sure that we've not stretched the truth there a little. I've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to talk about Tradition 9 and Tradition 12, and I trust at least one of my fellow panelists will be talking about Tradition 11. Tradition 9 talks about we're directly responsible to those we serve, and when we do events, who are the people we're serving? The attendees at those events. So I think it's important, right? There was a time, again, using IKIPA as my frame of reference, because that's my involvement with AA events and other WIPA conferences where I've lived. In the past, IKIPA did not provide any sort of financial information. Right? IKIPA is an enterprise where there's a lot of money coming in and a lot of money going out because there's a lot of people attending IKIPA, right? The lowest numbers have been, 1,800, 2,000 people, up to, 4,800, almost 5,000 people. And at $20 or $30 a head, that turns into a lot of money. And there's a lot of folks who kind of wonder, where's all that money going? And for years, IKIPA never really talked about it. You know, if you came up and asked some board member, some advisory council member, kind of on the side, they might tell you something, but there was not reporting, there was nothing. And then there were reports, but nobody knew how to get them. And then somewhere, somebody had the flash of brilliance that, hey, almost everybody's at this thing on Saturday night, right? Most people are there on Friday night, but some people can't, right? Saturday night's the night when everybody's there. And so the IKIPA started giving a short financial report at the Saturday night meeting before the speaker started. And all of a sudden, the little mirror, right? If you're involved with an AA event, you may hear the mirror about what's happening with all the money, right? There's the conspiracy theorists that say that, we're charging $25 and only cost $20 to put on the convention, so we're all putting the extra $5 a person in our pocket and having a big party for the host committee afterwards, right? There's all these conspiracy theories about all these nefarious things we're doing with the money. And when we started reporting out, all that stopped. All right, we take a couple minutes on Saturday night, right? It's sort of a buzzkill because everybody's excited. Nobody wants to hear about money, right? So it's a 2-minute thing. It's not a 20-minute thing, but it's an accountability because those folks are the folks that, right, whoever it is that's attending our event, they're the folks that we're responsible to, and we ought to be accountable to them. We ought to let them know what we're doing. We ought to let them know if they have more questions, they can come ask us. And the last thing I'm going to talk about before I sit down, before Calvin tugs on my jacket, is the spirit of Tradition 12 and this business of anonymity and conference speakers, convention speakers. And I won't talk about, it's outside the scope of this talk probably, to talk about my feelings about the cult of personality in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a big fan of the cult of personality in Alcoholics Anonymous, but that is what it is. What I'm thinking about this morning about Tradition 12 and speakers is not, let's bring in this guy because we think he's a great speaker, or let's bring in this lady because we think she's an awesome speaker. It's let's bring in so-and-so, or let's bring in so-and-so because they bring a draw. When we put his name on the flyer, when we put her name on the flyer, we know people are going to come, and we're in a more expensive hotel this year. So we need to get somebody who we know is going to be a draw. To me, I'm not sure that that's the spirit of Tradition 12, the spirit of anonymity and humility. And I'm not sure that it's fair that we put our speakers in that position to be draws for our convention. And our speakers, I think, ought to be there just to share their experience, strength, and hope. And there ought not be any pressure that they somehow bring somebody in. And I think that's all the time I have. I want to thank you all. At 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, through the rain. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Tom. You did a great job. I've been to OEPA, and I'm not young. It was a great experience, though. There's a lot of energy there, and this one thing they always do, oi, 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 pa, pa, pa. They just drive me crazy with that. But that's their thing. That's their thing. All right, I want to introduce our next speaker. Ooh, let me get it out. Our next speaker, Joe from California.
My name's Joe. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what the preamble, or the foreword to the first edition tells us how to introduce ourselves in public. Okay. Am I good here? Okay. I have been public information chair for Contra Costa County in California for a year and a couple of months. I will have 4 years of sobriety in July of this year. I'm glad my sponsor is in the room and my sobriety sister. I'm more delighted that my son is in this room. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, he and I got sober together over the telephone. I was in California. I was drinking every day, vodka straight. I didn't look real pretty. I would go to my girlfriend's house every night. I would drink until I knew that I couldn't drive. And I'd say, I got to go. And I would jump up and get in my car. And I would put my car on cruise control to drive 3 miles home. Because I couldn't control my foot. And it would be going 75 miles an hour on a 30-mile speed limit. My son came to visit me, and he saw me do this behavior at Sandy's house. She's since deceased from the disease of alcoholism. He was getting sober, and he said, Mom, don't you think that's insane? Thank you, Rob. It was insane, and so I went to Alcoholics Anonymous for my second time. And I had been in the program many years before, but I decided that I wanted to drink again. I didn't have slip. I didn't have relapse. I didn't have whatever you call it. I made a decision to drink. I wanted to date, and I didn't think I could date without drinking. So, you know, first things first. when I came in this time, I made a different decision. And sometimes I have to make it every day. I decided to stick no matter what. That was the theme I heard all day yesterday. Just stay. Just stay. And that has happened to me maybe 3 times since I've been sober this time. I wanted to, when that thought that I want to go just have one little tiny sip, I just say, but then you'd have to go to public information in Contra Costa County Intergroup and tell them you drank. Are you nuts? You know, pride and ego work sometimes. So I had this whole speech written, and I had it all the technical stuff about traditions, and I was ready to come here and teach you how to do these traditions at public events because I thought that was the topic. And then yesterday, I heard a lot of people tell their story, and I remembered that that's how we got here, was identifying with somebody's story. So my story is I'm the daughter of an evangelical fundamentalist preacher. We had no booze in our house. We had no nicotine. We couldn't dance. We couldn't go to movies. Absolutely no lust. So I did all that. You know. I'm the perfect stereotype of a Southern Baptist preacher's daughter. Some of you boys remember us, right? how I'm going to format this talk is I'm going to tell you what I was like, what tradition it violated, how public information tradition changed me, and how it has affected my recovery personally. So, are we good? Okay. The first tradition I like to talk about is tradition 6. And since I was told that some of you wouldn't know these traditions, so I was told by my service sponsor, I have to have two, you know, I need a real sponsor and a service sponsor. So, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. When the first month of I don't call myself a PI chair. I call myself a PI coordinator, because what I actually do in my job is I coordinate speakers to go out and do public presentations to the public, where we do not tell our story, we tell people what AA is and what it is not. So that I call myself a coordinator. So when I was a coordinator for the first month, the first thing that landed on my plate is somebody wanted to have us do a table presentation at a Christian rock concert. Now remember, I'm from California. We don't have a lot of Christians in our fellowships. So, we had a few, don't get me wrong. And so there was big concern that if we had a table at a Christian rock concert, we would be affiliated with Christians, God forbid. So, we took this to the intergroup operating committee and the PI group. They decided that you know, that was fine. That's our job. And we went to the PI committee and they quizzed me. I'd had this job for like less than this service commitment, excuse me, for less than a month. And they quizzed me on how I would not be affiliating public information Alcoholics Anonymous with the Christian rock concert, and they agreed that that was our job. And the lesson that I learned was this. It was the first event, and I am a control freak. I am a control freak. I organize. I over-organize. All my jewelry is lined up in the same color. My slacks are lined up in the same color. You know, everything is organized. And I had to be out of town for this Christian rock concert. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you for the oh no. A young woman, I'm guessing she was under 30, offered to coordinate this event and get the table there and the table cover and the staff. And I couldn't get her by phone, and I had to be out of town, and I was sweating it, and I was emailing her, and I was calling her and leaving voicemails, and somebody said, "Why don't you text her?" Oh, God, no. I don't text. I'm old. I did text her. She said, "Everything's covered," and you know what? I left, and everything happened. I learned that I could delegate and trust. That was for me. That was the lesson that God had for me, was to delegate and trust that they would do this thing. And you know what? Nobody, not one person that I ever heard about, ever accused us of being affiliated with a Christian group. So that was tradition 6 for me and what I learned from it. On tradition 10, outside issues, I'll read that tradition because I don't want to get it wrong, and my service sponsor told me to, if I was going to quote, to do it right. So, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Now, when I went, I was doing a public event, and a person in the audience, and when you're at public events and you get questions, they're not like questions from you guys. They're all over the chart. They will ask you questions that we have no knowledge about. We have no business knowing the answer. And this question came to me. What do you do when an alcoholic is violent or abusive? And I knew that AA had no position on that. Thank God I knew that. And I said, AA has no opinion on that. We don't talk about how to deal with drunks. We don't, that's not what we're about. I said, but I call 911. Now, I felt that the person who asked that deserved an answer out of respect for the question and the questioner. I took this to the Public Information Committee at AREA, and I told them what I did. And so I'm going to leave this up to you. Like Tom said earlier, we have to go with our inner wisdom about some of these things. I asked, there were 25 people there who were public information CPC chairs. I said, this is what I did. What would you have done? Half of the room said, I would have stopped when I said AA has no opinion. Because we're speaking, we're representing AA. As you can. Okay, thank you, Rob. Thank you, sir. I thought we were making out. I'm kidding! Outside issues. Let's get back on topic here. If half the room decided that they should have stopped, that I should have stopped by just saying that AA had no opinion. The other half of the room said, if I'm going to give my opinion in a public information talk, I claim it as mine. And that's what I did. This is what I would do. I would call 911. But what I learned out of this for my own recovery is that I cannot have an opinion about anything in the rooms of AA. I can't have an opinion about anything. In particular for me, this is very difficult when it comes to antidepressants. I have a very strong opinion, and I cannot ever let that be in an AA meeting. And the reason that I cannot do that is because it dilutes from the message of what I know that AA has to offer. It's not that I'm not willing to state my opinion all that, and Lord knows I'm more than willing. For me, if I talk about that in a meeting, they might get the impression that they can argue with me about my opinion about antidepressants, and they will totally miss what we have to offer. So I have to be rigorous about not expressing my opinion about whether you should wear a dress on the platform. That is not an issue that I want a newcomer to hear about. And I don't have an opinion about that. That's the only thing I don't have an opinion about. So now, Tom has also mentioned Tradition 11. And Tradition 11 is really what I wanted to talk about the whole time. which says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. For me, I have an opinion about this, and this is my opinion, not AA's. I feel that this is probably the most misunderstood tradition in all of Alcoholics Anonymous in my experience. Often when we're in business meetings of one kind or another, people say, oh, we won't do that because that's promotion, instead of saying, we'll do anything. Bill W. told us that we needed all kinds of publicity. And the reason, this tradition says that it's personal. I have to maintain my personal anonymity because my ego is so big, you know, and I would do anything to have it not be so big, and it's, you know, coming down by increments, but it's not there, and it'll probably never get totally there. But for me, Bill said in Language of the Heart, good publicity of almost every description is needed for us to carry the message outside the room. And for me, the catch is to keep my ego out of it, to keep it's not about Joe, whatever my last name might be. but Mike's, this is what I used to be like. I used to be on, I would do anything I could to be on the front cover of Trade Association magazines. I would do anything I could to be on the front page of the Perkins, Oklahoma Journal. I would do anything I could to get my validation from public recognition. I would do handstands. And I came by that very naturally because I was taught to do testimonies in church, stand up on Sunday night and tell what God had done for me from the time I was 7 years old. I got praise and glory and honor in my family for doing stand-up. And so that came... that came to me naturally. But for me today, the important thing is not to say my last name. My important thing is for you to hear the message about recovery and I do everything in my power to promote AA. Signs and buses are fine with me, you know. I don't care if we have a radio program and we do a meeting on a radio. None of that, as long as we carry the message. Thank you. What happened is I had two events right away. I was working a public information table and this woman I saw with a hand camera, and she's walking around taking pictures of all the tables that were there and the people who were standing beside him. My first thought was, oh, good, I'll be on the front page of their newsletter. The second thought was, how do I ask her not to take my picture? You know, this is different behavior. And then I just said, would you take a picture of our table, which says Alcoholics Anonymous and has the phone number? That was my third thought. That is not the old Joe. This is not the way I ever, ever, ever ran my life. For then, I said, would you take a picture of the table? She says, oh, yeah, you're anonymous. You know, and we laughed and went on. They get us. They get us. Then I was at another event where there was the MC was a local television personality, and there was a cameraman there, and I went up to him quietly behind some so that I wouldn't be making a scene. Don't take my picture, you know, because I could do that too. And I asked him not to photograph me, and he says, of course, we respect that you prefer not to be photographed. So there was what I learned from that is that even today on this platform, I truly, truly, truly want to tell you my last name. I want to give you my email address. I want to shout from the rooftops. I want you to take pictures of me and post them everywhere. Please don't. Thank you. Okay, I'm teasing. I have struggled today not to try and impress you with how brilliant I am about the traditions. I wanted to quote to you everything Bill W. said about the publicity, but I've restrained myself. I want you to know that practicing these traditions through public information is changing Joe personally, and that I'm hoping that you might have heard something that will help you evaluate how the traditions are affecting your personal life, not just your AA life. And I'm really, really grateful that Bill W. was one of the world's biggest promoters. I relate to that man so much. I am thankful that he overcame the conservatives, because if he hadn't, I would not have the gift of sobriety today. Thank you. I want a hug.
Okay. Joe had to be restrained, and Bill had to be restrained. Okay, our next speaker is Mike from Michigan.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. A nervous alcoholic. I was okay while Tom and Joe were talking. Gosh, I can't see without my glasses. Now I can't see you guys. So I was thinking this morning, when you're doing things like this, it's very honoring. It's also very hard for me as an alcoholic to say yes. But I was taught early on that we don't say no to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've also heard other opinions that we can say no if we're not prepared. One time at my home group, I was asked to say the prayer, and I was newly sober, and it came out as a no. I couldn't do that. And I was reminded afterwards by some of our old-timers that really all you have to ask is people to join you in the Serenity Prayer at the very least. You know. And since that time, I've never said no, so when I was asked to give this talk, I was pissed. But I said yes, and you know, and what it is, it's God kicking me in the butt to get going again, to start living again. And I had a tragedy a couple of years ago, and I've been living in that tragedy instead of living in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't stop going to meetings. I cut down on my meetings, but what I did do was I got away from the text. And when you get away from the text and you're asked to talk about traditions and how they relate to AA events, you start to think to yourself, So here I am. During my morning meditation, and I read out of a few books, but the one that I brought, it talked about being willing to take chances, and that it may be necessary to fall on my face sometimes when I take those chances. But it went on to say that the program is about sharing, accepting, giving, and interacting with other people. And by doing that, I'm the benefactor. And if you benefit from it, that's awesome. You know, unity, the 12 traditions, is part of our three legacies. And, you know, it's been said, I'll say this, it's been said that any event that is run by AAs, about AA or for AAs, is an AA event. Now, there's probably several of you, if you're thinking through that real quick, you might disagree with that, because we hear it all the time, that if it doesn't have a speaker or somebody talking, it's not an AA event. So check your references, because what I may say up here may not be factual. But I will tell you this. My home group, we celebrate every man, woman in our group. We celebrate their 30-year anniversary by having a golf outing. There's no AA speaker. The person, we're celebrating, and to me that's an AA event. We're celebrating sobriety. And along with the man or woman that's getting to 30 years are people that are brand new. First learning how to laugh, feel a connection with other people again. Tradition one, I can read the tradition if you'd like. Anybody like that? Okay. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Really, the first tradition encompasses all of AA traditions. Unity is everything or it's nothing, right? We don't survive without unity. Tradition two, when I thought about this tradition, and I read it over and over many, many times over this last week. We made a vacation out of this with our best friends. I'm blessed to be able to do that. I'm blessed to be able to say this is the third time I've been able to do this international conference. I did an international conference at IQPA my first year, and I was very lucky to chair the old-timers panel and introduce all of them, and I still have the big book that they signed for me. And some of them at the time, I think there was 120 years, and there was only three guys. And that was in Cleveland in 91. And I like to take credit for this with IQPA, but I'm not sure it was the first time it was ever done. But yeah, we gathered in one big circle at the end. And because that's the way they did it at my home group. You know, and that's our first learning grounds. I was thinking of tradition two here, and what it brought to mind was all of the folks that came before me. The folks that came before my sponsor, Bill and Bob, of course. And what they've handed down to me was so empowering that I wouldn't be here without it. And we have a tendency to hand down this message of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it be the concepts, the traditions, whatever it is, the 12 steps, the way we receive it, sometimes. Sometimes we have to go further than the folks around us. We have to, if we want to live happy, joyous, and free, we have to get involved in the text, in my opinion. And we have a study group, a men's group, my best friend Ray and I were part of. And it's a group of men. We're not all like-minded. In fact, him and I are like-minded in some ways, but opposites in others. And it's called Each One Teach One. And there's new people there. Brand new. We've had guys that have passed away in the group. But anyway, tradition two. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. You know, and I'm reminded, of course, of the story that's in, that goes along with this tradition they make an example of. But I'm reminded of a guy, he's passed since, but he started a group, and it's still one of the biggest groups in our area. And it wasn't my home group, but it was like a secondary home group to me throughout my sobriety. And his name was Tom L. And the guy was the first. He got the group going. He put the first pot of coffee on. He continued to do that for quite a while. And then the group conscience took over. And Tom no longer had the keys, and Tom got pissed off. And Tom left the meeting, and Tom became the bleeding deacon, you know, resentful, and that group will never survive without me, similar to the story that's in the tradition here. And then later, 10 years or so later, he shows back up, and the meeting's bigger than ever, one of the biggest groups in the area. Like I said, still is today. Now, Tom passed with 51 years of sobriety, and that meeting's, I believe, going to be 54 or 55 this year. And but it's those type of people. I told Joe that you reminded me of a gal in my home group, my original home group, and it'll always be my home group. Her name was Susie. And back then, when you could smoke and everything, Susie would make sure the place was spotless. But she would get pissed off at everybody because she was the only one making the place look spotless. But when you lead by example. And soon I was helping her, and I hated anything to do with smoking. It's the only thing I never smoked. But was tobacco. But I would. Those are the mentors. My sponsor, Pat. This year I'll have 24 years on Labor Day. And I talked to Pat my first 17, 18 years every day. Not to call up whining and snibbling, sometimes. But because I wasn't that type. I more or less, you had to draw it out of me. I was sort of an introvert. And that's why this is so hard for me to be up in front of people. But he's one of our elder statesmen, like Tom became later. You know, he sat back and he said, look at this. This is amazing. You know, and there's a lot of guys, a lot of my mentors have passed or moved. Like, it happens to all of us. If you're brand new, it's going to happen to you too. You know, people, they come in and out of your lives, but we don't have to forget them. When we get an opportunity, we can talk about them. Certainly, my group counts on Pat a lot. He's silent, and he doesn't speak until he thinks it's necessary. And then, when the group conscience ends, his was the wisdom, you know, him and others. I was thinking tradition three, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There's so much more into all these traditions. You don't know it until you study it. You know, and I was just so reminded of that why do you get away from what's healthy? Why? Don't know. It happens. Kind of baffling and powerful. So if I say I'm a member, I'm a member. And nobody can do anything about that. I don't have to conform to guidelines and rules. I got to put up with all the knuckleheads that were just like me when I came in. And I was not a very, you didn't want to be around me too much. So that's changed today. I'm very grateful to say that I have so many friends. I feel saddened sometimes because I can't get around to them all. But they're thought of all the time. But that guy or that gal that's struggling in the beginning can become, have leadership values, have good input. Our voice, every voice is so important. Add in the story, tradition three. He's an atheist, right? Salesman, atheist, got sober, or tried to get sober, but eventually drinks because he cannot find a power of his own understanding, whatever that is. That's kind of how I was. I didn't have a God of my own understanding. I still sometimes question it because of this tragedy. But everything comes in a full circle when we work for it. And the way I'm dressed. Susie, from my home group, when I would give talks in a tank top, when I had a six-pack and I could climb on roofs because that's where I lived, she would say, thanks for dressing up for us. You know, and I think, and I'm kind of glad I'm in this outfit because of the heat factor. But I think it is important to show people. I believe in tradition, and that's a tradition to me that you dress nicely. This is dressing nicely for me. I wore shorts when I got married. Ask my wife. Well, shortly after I was married, but you know, a couple of minutes after. I belong to another group that I have to wear a tux every Friday night. that don't go over too good either. But then Ed, as I did, finds this higher power, and then poof, we're on our way, right? Because now the group doesn't have to be our higher power, and that was my higher power in the beginning. So, oh boy, I think I'm running out of things to stare at, and I'm not going to press my luck because I'm feeling pretty good about ending it with that, and I'm very blessed to be here tonight, and I'm thankful for all of you folks that came here to listen to just a normal Joe, you know. But I try to practice what I preach, and if I ain't preaching, I ain't practicing, and that's why this thing was very nerve-wracking, and I'm glad it's over.
Could we thank all the speakers again? They did a wonderful job.